Welcome to the Linux Slugcast. We are an open podcast log that meets at 9 p.m. Eastern every first and third Friday of the month using Mumble. If you'd like to join us, please visit linuxslugcast.com for the server details. We also have a Mumble how-to on the site explaining how to configure Mumble. Then just join us in the Linux Slugcast room. During the live show, if you are unable to join us in Mumble, you can listen to us streaming live. You can also join us in IRC on Freenode, pound Linux Slugcast. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you'd like us to discuss, please email us at feedback@linuxslugcast.com. We also have a Google Plus community site and a mailing list. Visit our website for the direct links. Good evening, and welcome to episode 89. I am Honky Magoo. And
I am Netminer.
All right, you put beer right back there. So I was just going to let that one go for a few, let that go with dead air for a little while, and then it would fix with the truncate silence. All right, with me is Netminer. Do you need a minute before we continue on, or?
Yeah, I'm just going to grab something to drink. Continue on. I can hear you.
Well, I kind of need you here.
I'm back.
All right, so we have one piece of feedback, and the header was it for is no need to read on the air. Hopefully he doesn't mind that I actually do read it on the air. But a guy by the name of Tom Ostring, and I'm sorry if I screwed that up, said, if I heard correctly, Netminer hasn't gotten around to play with a single board machine. This year I was gifted two new Pi 3 Model Bs. I've only used one to actually do projects, and I'd like to pass ownership of the other to Netminer. If I heard wrong, please disregard this email. If I heard correctly, I would like an address to send him one. I'll pay shipping. It's my way of saying thank you for the great contributions he gives to the show. Thanks, Tom.
I will take that as a tremendous compliment. But right now, I am up to my neck in x86 systems, and I really couldn't support building a Pi at the moment. I thank you very much for that generous offer. Right now I've been maxing out my older tech, so I will take that as a tremendous compliment, and I hope he can find someone local. Again, you may want to look at our last broadcast and think about maybe building the music player for a Alzheimer's person, and there's probably someone in your neighborhood that could use the music player far more than I can use just another Debian PC.
Yeah, that was very, very generous.
That's just a suggestion, but that seems to go along with the gentleman's generosity.
Indeed. So, that was our only feedback. 5150 isn't with us tonight, but he left some links to some security stuff. Have you had a chance to at least open those up yet?
Opening now. Yeah, I've got the first link open. Seems interesting. Starts to raise questions about any antivirus, doesn't it?
Yep. So the link talks about how... I read it real quick, and I'm hoping I don't mess it up now. That they think that... the Russian state-sponsored hackers stole highly classified NSA documents from a contractor in 2015 with the help of a security program made by Russian-based security firm Kaspersky. So Kaspersky is an AV program. I believe it's an AV program, right?
Yes, it's supposed to be fairly respectable.
Right. So they're saying that the Russian-based security firm, which I'm guessing is the same one who did other recent hacks in like the last year or so, By the way, it seems like they think that Kaspersky and the Russian hacker team was responsible for hacking the NSA.
Yeah, it seems that they believe that Kaspersky was used as a channel of some sort. Witting, unwitting, whatever. That's unclear. Whether somebody was moonlighting or what kind of connection in the dark there was there.
Don't know. Run Linux, trust nobody. I was just gonna say, I think you're right. It does kind of put into question anybody any antivirus, because you really don't know. Like, it's got to go out to get all of its but I haven't been away from AV for so long, I forget what the heck it's called. The big file with all the list of all the known vulnerabilities, and then start doing its scan of everything. And so it's both calling out and it's scanning your computer. So if there's something malicious, I mean, if that thing's malicious, you're screwed.
As a refugee from Windows, that's a virus definitions file, and it's virus, antivirus, anti-malware, a lot of stuff has that. On a similar note, this crack vulnerability that people are coming across, I wonder if that's one of the weaknesses that the NSA helpfully engineered into WPA2.
Anything is possible.
It is believed, well, one of the reason why IPsec is so difficult to configure certain parts of the US government like the internet to be secure, but not too secure.
Right. Though I think you've brought this up in the past. I think it's, as a general rule, if you really want something to be secure, don't put it on Wi-Fi.
Well, the Wi-Fi thing that they're talking about is that Wi-Fi as a channel is somehow these guys are cracking the link between your AP and your main sys and your main routing device.
So the link between your router and your AP? Not sure I said that right.
That seems to be the case.
Really?
At least the way I was reading some of the stuff.
See, none of the ones I put, I put two in the two links that I found about the crack Wi-Fi into the show notes. One of them was just a more of an explanation of it, and the other one, I believe, was the list of who has already responded and what their responses were so far. Actually, I think that was kind of the gist of both links. But yeah, I did have, and none of them really went into that great of a detail as to, sorry, as to the how the crack actually works.
Well, in my reading, again, I'm not security and I don't do Wi-Fi, and I was kind of disappointed when I couldn't get my router without Wi-Fi. I haven't got it enabled, but the systems are, it was somewhere of inserting sort of a man in the middle capability into the handshaking of WPA2.
All right, so one link I found says, short for Wi-Fi protected access to WPA2 is the security protocol used by most wireless networks today. Researchers have discovered and published a flaw on the WPA2 that allows anyone to break this security model and steal data flowing between your wireless device and the targeted Wi-Fi network, such as passwords, chat messages, and photos. The attack works against all modern protected Wi-Fi networks. The researchers wrote of their exploit, dubbed CRACK, short for Key Reinstallation Attack. So between your wireless device and the targeted Wi-Fi network.
Classic man in the middle.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah, I'm going to put this one into the show notes as well. It seems to at least go into more detail as to what it is, at least than I think the other two that I put in there did.
I think the slots for my in a couple of my machines, which have Wi-Fi and hardwired network, the Wi-Fi card slots suddenly became a good place to put my USB 3.1 card.
One of those things, you can't argue with the convenience of Wi-Fi, but you know it's going to be a security risk. At least you should understand that it's going to be a security risk.
Yes, try telling that to a Windows user.
Well, using Windows as a security risk. Though, from what I've heard with my limited amount of knowledge of the newer Windows systems, from what I've heard, apparently they are getting better. I'm not sure how truthful that is, but it seems like they're trying harder to add more permissions to things to make it a little bit more difficult for things to just install on their own, though I'm pretty sure it's not like a very strong permissions.
Well, the whole thing is, it sounds like if you've got a big enough machine, which most people do these days, running a dedicated Wi-Fi VirtualBox or VM where you use that VM for everything that requires that you need Wi-Fi for, and sandbox it hard from the rest of your system.
That doesn't seem like it would work. Because even if it's in a VM, obviously it would be any traffic that you have going over Wi-Fi would still be the regular traffic, right?
What I'm saying is that you're creating an isolated endpoint for your Wi-Fi, and it wouldn't, if it's coming out of your machine, that's the point of vulnerability. So everything is channeled through a limited use low security system.
Right. I think the safest way to do Wi-Fi would be RDP or VNC into a networked computer, depending on what the security is for whatever protocol you are using, which VNC or RDP or whatever.
I think the problem you have with everything, yes, you have to go to a higher level. You're talking first, either going is to go to basically an SSH based inner channel.
Now, forgive my ignorance, because I am very limited with some of the remote type things. I've done regular SSH, but isn't there like SSHX?
Well, what you basically do is type everything that you want to do remote over the SSH connection. SSH provides the security end-to-end with keys that you transport through a secure layer, i.e. not Wi-Fi. You take your little disk and transfer your keys by if not hardwired network by SneakerNet with a little flash drive or what have you.
What was the name of that remote protocol that you wanted to play around with?
That's X2Go.
That's right.
And I believe it. I don't know how it deals with ECK with SSH, but I believe that they play nice.
All right. So do you think, how secure do you think it would be to use something like a laptop with Wi-Fi to connect Wi-Fi on a laptop to connect to a desktop that you have on your local network that to do things. So you're still using Wi-Fi, but you're using Wi-Fi connected to a machine that obviously in the example of this crack, it would still be vulnerable. But what about just in general?
The idea is what SSH is supposed to do, unlike Telnet and all of the others, is to make a secure channel across an insecure network. So what you would do is have SSH make the connection to your desktop, and everybody else talks over the SSH link.
Would you ever consider doing that in your house?
I'm very much considering something like that. Also, this crack attack makes remote VPNs a little sketchy, because they can crack the remote VPN or at least read the mail on the way by for logins.
That's if they haven't updated yet. Apparently there's been a lot of people updating as well.
Yeah, I'm wondering. I'm just wondering. Myself, I've been seriously considering should I get a machine that's actually detached of using private internet access that is a commercial company, but they seem to be pretty good. I know that they have tutorials about installing on pfSense, so you can PIA your entire system through basically it makes your entire network one private internet access device, and private allows five devices. That is, as of my last exploration, it may have changed.
So is there any way you can explain that one a little bit further?
Well, what they do is they secure stuff from your device through whatever networks that are attached to their servers, and your real internet traffic comes from a selected private internet access server somewhere in the world. So they secure your traffic from your phone to their server somewhere as an inner channel thing. Or from your desktop, laptop, whatever, wearable unit.
So how would that differ from something that, like Tor?
You select where it comes out, and the security is such that you know that you're dealing with their servers everywhere. Tor is an anonymous random or pseudo-random selection of servers, some of which may belong to friendly or unfriendly people.
But it's my understanding that the traffic is secured enough that the friendly or unfriendly servers shouldn't be able to access or be able to read any of the traffic anyways, though.
You got to remember that that's for people with normal spelling.
Fair enough.
What they're talking about is people with very short names.
Right.
Like GHQ and NSA and whatever the German or French or, you know, Arabic translations of those are.
Right. That's true, too.
Basically, how many million dollars of cracking system is the guy going to use?
Right. I'm pretty sure, like, nothing I do, I don't think, would be of any interest to any of those people. I would worry more about people who are looking to steal my private information for nefarious purposes than I am, like, NSA.
Well, people versus government people is always the balance you go against. Also, but it does provide I don't know how their key exchanges work, and I'm sure that if you go to the private internet access, they'll tell you how they deal with crack, and or they probably have a statement of some kind. I'm assuming, but it seems like the kind of thing that they'd be jumping on. But they provide that kind of secure channel that we're talking about between devices. The only thing that you can't do with a PIA connection is dynamic DNS. The pipe is purely dynamic, but they do not want anyone running up the other side of it. This is probably to keep them from being a host of onion-type sites.
Makes sense.
Now, you can use their service to get out onto the network, SSH into your shall we say DigitalOcean, or pick your favorite server provider site that has dynamic DNS installed on it, and do business that way. But that is because you're handling security out there in the mean internet world, from DigitalOcean to whoever tries to talk to your DigitalOcean instance.
All right, do we want to move on to the next link?
Sure. Move on whenever you like.
All right. This one's apparently about White House Chief of Staff John Kelly's smartphone being hacked. It actually doesn't specify. It says the breach was apparently discovered over the summer when Kelly gave the smartphone to the White House tech support after having problems with it and struggling to successfully run software updates. Several questions remain unanswered as to what type of phone Kelly was using and what sort of access hackers may have had. The possibilities run the gamut and have potentially serious consequences. My thoughts on that are, that's not good. I thought they all had, like, Blackberries or something that they had, like, fully locked down.
Seems like what they need is a vault somewhere where anyone at high levels of government just hands over their personal phones and maybe other devices and gets issued government secured equivalents.
I'm not against the idea of them having their own phones. I think that when they go into meetings where there's potentially sensitive information being talked to, then the phones need to go into, like, a lockbox somewhere. I think if anything is going to be sent out back and forth and they need to have a separate phone, that, like I said, as far as I knew beforehand, they all had like Blackberries that were extremely locked down or something like that. I'm not sure if that's true or how well the Blackberry is locked down, but I mean, if they want to use that phone for sensitive information and then have a separate one for their own personal stuff, whether it's just family, business, like where their next appointment is, I have no problem with that. Or even if, like, apparently, like our president that likes to like to tweet stuff, fine, he could do it on his own personal phone, but not use that phone for anything that's government related.
Well, the problem you have, especially with people who are high-level business people and not tech savvy, is that they don't know the difference. My phone is my phone. If you say that when they go into a secure facility, let's say the White House, that when they go through the gate, that they give up their personal phone, I can see that one.
I don't even necessarily have to go into the gate, but if you go into certain rooms, those certain rooms, you should have to check your phone at the door. And as far as I know, I think that's actually like protocol in some situations that you're just because you never know whose phone has what, that most people's personal phones get checked at the door before they go into secure any type of secure meeting.
Well, from what I've read, and again, this is fiction, but it's probably based on fact, there are electronics free rooms and in government facilities, embassies, whatever,
Wait a minute.
where,
Sorry. Sorry, I thought you were done with the thought. Go ahead.
but so the whole idea, yes, checking your phone. But the problem you have is when somebody comes out of the meeting and wants to make a call to somebody else about that meeting, which phone does he use?
Sorry, while you started talking, something just occurred to me that I know that people check their phones in situations like that. I had to check my phone when I served on a jury and I was deliberating. I had to check my phone.
Well, that's the thing. But also, what's to keep someone going out of that secure zone and talking about that highly secured meeting on an unsecured device?
One would hope common sense, though that seems to be very, very lacking in our government.
Your Honor, I rest my case.
It's like a lot of people who get jobs, and when they get their jobs, they're given a separate phone for work, and they only use those work those that phone for work things, or a separate laptop. They only use that laptop for certain things. Why is that common sense that the rest of us seem to deal with that they would have a hard time with? This is for my personal, this is for work.
Because these guys think everything is theirs. These are the kings of the universe. The emperor has no clothes, is what we're finding out.
Yep.
Also, there's an interesting piece of fiction that I think you might want to get. It's called The Last Centurion. The Warren administration is looking a lot familiar if you overlook gender. It's a pretty heavy book that was, I guess, posited around what a Clinton administration might have been like. However, some stuff may end up happening in the alternate universe that we're in today.
Written blog style. How does that one go? Is it that seems to be an interesting style to write a book in.
Amazingly well. Talks about details of family farming. Notice the term small is not in there because if a farm survives these days, it's got to get big or go home. Other things, military, whatever. Good officers, good leadership, bad leadership, impossible leadership, impossible farming, whatever. And generally, some our farming people may want to do it with their beverage of choice close by because it is very accurate and can be very rough.
All right, we want to jump on to the next one. So it seems like the T-Mobile website exposed customer data to anyone who knew a target's phone number. Apparently, it's not clear how long this vulnerability was present in the company's site, but the company said in a statement that it resolved the issue in less than 24 hours after security researchers first discovered it. Right now, I'm just glad I don't have T-Mobile. And the video that's streaming on this web page is very distracting. Did I lose you?
Unfortunately, I'm getting redirected to a Final Fantasy link. I have a strong suggestion. One link per line might be helpful.
Yes. All right. So the ones I put in were about the crack Wi-Fi, and the last one was on Linux. Samsung announcing that they're going to have put, or you can run Linux on the Samsung devices. And what it appears to be is, give me a second, let me open up the link. But there is basically like a docking station that Samsung is putting out that can be docked up to a monitor. And when you plug the, I think it's the new Galaxy S8, S8 Plus, or the Note 8 into the one of, to this docking station, and you install, what is it, Linux on Samsung or something. Like I said, let me bring the link up. So the docking station is called DeX. It's a hardware accessory first sold by Samsung along with the Samsung Galaxy S8 and the S8 Plus. It consists of a dock station allowing the users to connect the Galaxy S8 and the S8 Plus, or the Galaxy Note 8 with a monitor, keyboard, and mouse to get access to a full desktop UI. The dock has a HDMI port, an Ethernet port, and two USB ports. DeX is simply an extension of Android Nougat, Android Nougat's multi-window to push optimized applications onto the connected display. There are obvious limitations to this, as a lot of software needs to be updated to support Samsung's DeX, but that's changing. Now Samsung is launching Linux on Galaxy feature, which is an app that enables the capability of running multiple GNU/Linux operating systems on a Samsung smartphone when connected to a DeX dock. There is already a way to run GNU Linux environments on any Android device, but it isn't as sophisticated as Samsung's implementation. Thoughts?
Probably nice if the, for those people who have a smartphone.
Just got a new phone and I'm wishing I'd gotten a Galaxy S8.
Well, remember, Custer was an early adopter.
I was thinking that exact same thing. Give it a while, maybe another year or two. See if it actually pans out, fleshes out, and actually works.
You know, this is sort of FUD in reverse.
Yeah, it's not something that's entirely difficult to do. Granted, it's what Shuttleworth and Ubuntu was. It seems to be what Shuttleworth and Ubuntu wanted to do with their whole idea of convergence, but it seems like if they can work things out right, like he was like the article was saying about some applications have to be better optimized for this or to be able to run better on the this. It definitely seems like it has potential to be something noteworthy.
Oh yeah, it sounds like it has a lot of potential. Also, the one thing that Samsung has is leverage in the phone space that Ubuntu never had. And they're also leverage in the hardware space, which Ubuntu also never really had.
Exactly. I think the big thing is with something like this, it would need, I mean, even the idea of I mean, this thing has a, it doesn't say whether it's a gig Ethernet port or what the any of the details of the Ethernet port, but the dock has an HDMI port, an Ethernet port, and two USB ports. That's not bad. You're almost running like and you figure the specs on those phones alone, I mean, you're almost running a full-fledged machine right there. Even if you don't use this thing as like even if like further down the line this thing doesn't fully pan out, but those docks are still out there, I could see using. There's a now I'm gonna have to look it up. It's called Android servers on Android, something like that, where you can basically run like different types of servers off of an Android phone, anything from like well, I think all types like Samba. You know what? Let me go find a link for that.
Well, you got to remember you're running at least a Raspberry Pi type thing in your pocket.
It's a lot more powerful than a Raspberry Pi.
I'm saying that's your processor or some of the super higher order ARM type things, but if you think of it running, taking what they're basically doing is linking into more of the Linux kernel of Android.
Right, exactly. So when it was,
And
sorry, go ahead.
what they're talking about is basically using the Android plus their new proprietary magic to have a translation layer between Android and more traditional Linux applications. Somewhat like you're having with OS X or the Linux subsystem on Windows.
So the application is called Servers Ultimate, and they have a Pro Edition, and you can run anything from, let's see, I'm gonna read through this list. You can run a Caddy, CVS, DC Hub, DHCP, UPnP, DNS, DDNS, eDonkey, no idea. Email, POP3, SMTP, FTP proxy, FTP, FTPS, FTPES, Flash policy, GET, Gopher, HTTP Snoop, ICAP, IRC bot, IRC, ISCSI, Icecast, Lite HTTPD, LPD, Load Balancer, MQTT, Memcache, MongoDB, MySQL, NFS, Node.js, NTP, NZB client, NAP, NTP, Napster? Hold on a second. Napster? Is that still a thing that people can actually do?
Haven't you heard code never dies?
Fair enough.
Well, also, do you notice the one thing missing from any of that?
No, what?
No desktop.
Right, but this is Servers Ultimate. This is a an application that, like I'm saying, if for the apparently you have to install the application if you want a desktop. You have to install the application What is it called? Just think it's just called Samsung Linux. Where was I think that's just what that application is called, is Samsung Linux, and then you'll get a desktop. What I'm saying is, if further down the line, if like this thing doesn't catch on and you have one of these phones, you can buy the probably the Dex thing cheap, put Servers Ultimate on it, that Android app on it, and then just have this thing as a dead running as a server in your house. Thinking of other uses for this besides its designated purpose, which was as a desktop environment.
If the Android for that phone has the magic links to the expansion,
To which expansion?
if the Android, the basic Android, to the has the drivers for the expansion device, then your server possibly can use it. The one way that I could see them locking it up is by making it so that if you don't get their Linux environment, you don't get the drivers to the external device.
So you're saying if you don't run the Linux, the Samsung to Linux application, then on one of the three designated phones, then you wouldn't be able to add things. You wouldn't be able to use the hardware, the Dex dock.
Right. Nobody has said what the Dex dock does under plain Android.
That's a good point too.
Now, if the Dex dock works under plain Android, then that server system gives you a very good anything up to and including perhaps a media center.
Right. And looking at it, I don't. It almost seems like, oh man, I want to say I read somewhere that it will run multiple different types of Linux. So if it's like right here, it says Dex. With Dex, you can have Ubuntu 16.04 or another distribution running on a Dex dock via connected peripherals. As Linux distributions are made for a desktop-oriented UI, Linux on Galaxy is a perfect fit for Dex because Dex connects to your smartphone to a much larger display. So even if you get like 16.04 Desktop Edition running or 16, you should still be able to install server-type applications and try and use this as a server, I would imagine.
Yeah, the difference between the two things we're talking about is the UI side of things. And also, it would be nice to know what kind of USB they support.
That's true too.
Well, let's put it this way, if they have USB 3 on there, they can probably run rings around my old P4. USB 2 is okay for storage. USB 3 for storage would allow you to put anything up to an SSD hanging off of this beast.
All right, so I found a little bit more. There's you can click on a link on that the link I put in there. You can click on the thing that says Dex, and it'll bring you down to it explains a little bit more about Dex. It says Samsung Dex is an accessory feature of the Samsung Galaxy S8, requiring the Samsung Dex station to work. The Samsung Dex provides an Android-based desktop-like experience to allow a Wait for it, seamless experience between desktop and smartphone. You can access apps, edit documents, browse the web, watch videos, and more using your smartphone, processing the connectivity capabilities, but extending them to a larger display with a keyboard and mouse. So it seems like the Dex was originally designed for the purpose of giving it a desktop-like environment to just Android itself, and then the whole using it for with Linux is just kind of like a side project or a little extra thing. I want to see if it shows pictures of it, and I can see it. I just would love to see if it would show, give me any specific details on the, like you were talking about, which type of USB connectors are attached to it.
It sounds like it was designed to expand Android to the desktop via classic docking station for Android. And then they said, gee, if we can run it under Android and Android has a Linux core, let's see what we can do about the Linux side of things. Go for it.
So it looks like it has, let's see. Close the flat. This is for travel ports and USB-C ports. Two USB A 2.0, USB-C charging, LAN Ethernet, HDMI. Connect a mouse keyboard Ethernet cable, data connectivity. Let's see if I can get more details. So it's US. It's two USB A 2.0. Still want to see what the type of Ethernet it is.
Yeah, well, if you consider it as a primarily as a user interface device, then USB 2 makes perfect sense.
Right. I like their idea is mostly that the like it's like. Like it says in the description, you keyboard and mouse type of a connector.
Actually, what they're carefully not saying is it makes your phone into a thin client.
Right.
But then again, hooking it up to a thin client, hooking it up like this and cabling it to almost any, fairly modern PC would give you a great environment because the Samsung phone would handle the screen. And your x86 machine could handle all of the server side duties.
Yep. It seems to be just, you can buy it new for like just under $100. I guess on Amazon it's 97. You get it used, which people are already selling it used for $79.
Well, it's saying that for some stuff, just getting that and whatever. Remember, there are some people that will be give start giving up their Galaxy S's, 8 S's or what, 8X, whatever, You'll be seeing the phones come out too, so you may be able to get a bundle without the magic Linux package for something reasonable. I mean, but I'm talking maybe it may take till June or July, but then the people who change their phones for the next great thing.
Is it bad that I almost want to see it fail just so I can possibly pick one up cheap? I mean, obviously the phone won't be cheap, but my wife actually has a Galaxy S8, so if like later on down the line when she decides to upgrade to something else, I can maybe get it and then buy a dock cheap and then play around with that.
Actually, you could go into negotiations with your spouse about getting her a better phone as soon as a better phone appears, and you have an inside channel to someone who might be, you could subsidize her upgrade to a new phone.
That's very true. I like your thinking, sir. Now, isn't this along the same lines as something came out a while back where you can put a your smartphone into a laptop and have a similar experience.
the well, there was something called the Atrix, I believe,
That's it.
that everybody was snapping up and hooking their pies to and
Right.
stuff. That was more of a complete well, headless laptop, keyboard, screen, etc. This is just the interfacing, not node that you need to hook everybody else up to.
Right. Most everybody usually has a screen, some sort of a screen, whether it's just HDMI, so you can hook it up to any size TV if you wanted to, or everyone's got usually a keyboard or mouse or keyboard mouse combo lying around for the most part.
Also, it will probably talk to industry standard USB dongles. I'm saying you drop in a Microsoft keyboard, RF keyboard, or what have you.
That's true too.
I say industry standard, not open source standard. So you do get a little more wide range there. And there are some keyboards I know that hook up to multiple devices if you're in the Android, Windows, etc. universe that don't work quite so well under Linux.
Looks like they're putting out cheaper versions of this too. A company called MELOPOW, Melopoy, is putting one out for about $40. It's $38.99, where it's not like the official Samsung one is like this weird puck thing that kind of folds up, and then it's got a fan on the back and stuff like that. This one is just a USB-C connector that connects to something that with the with the what appears to be the same interfaces.
Well, there are also, if you want to look for this in a more, I would look at pluggable.com. They do things like this for tablets.
There, this one's a little bit different. It's got the USB Type-C adapter to it. It has the HDMI, and then it has the USB 3.0 on it.
Yeah, well, I would look at their compatibility list real careful. It depends on where the magic connections are made. If they're made through the charging port, data connections to the charging port, which, well, that's generally a bad idea from a security standpoint, but if that relies on your phone's USB 3C charging port and it has data connections, that may be good. The DeX is kind of little cagey about where the data is comes out and where the power goes in.
This one says it's designed for the Nintendo Switch. Work as dock. Need a strong charger like official Nintendo charger. Designed for Galaxy. I guess it's designed for both the Nintendo Switch and for the Galaxy S8, S8 Plus, and the Note 8.
Again, these definitions are getting a little careful. So if everybody's talking through the Type-C connector, that makes a lot of sense. I don't know if the DeX hooks in through a proprietary connector or through the charging connector. The data leads on a Type-C charging connector.
I think it's just the Type-C charging connector. I don't think there's any other connector down there.
Well, that's been the bane of docking stations, is that everybody builds in a proprietary docking connector. So if somebody's finally got a clue and said Type-C has enough bandwidth for everybody, for everything I want to do, go for it. And that USB 3 means that your phone could actually have an SSD attached.
That would be interesting. Yeah, it appears like there's all sorts of versions of this.
Well, if you're using USB Type-C, that gives you a lot of possibilities. And if you're industrial enough to get the internals under NDA of video access, because after all, they're talking about this taking advantage of Samsung's multi-screen Android, which is something probably like a proprietary X. Anyone who is industrial and is willing to sign the appropriate, I won't tell anybody documents, probably can get the specs so that they can build off-brand variations of this product. People often talk about Androids being proprietary and stuff, but from an industrial standpoint, that is helpful because you start using industrial NDA-based technology transfers and licensing agreements and stuff, which industry has been doing for eons. Hello, Hunky. Have I lost you?
Nope, sorry. Just still looking around at these and thinking.
Well, just try not to drool on your keyboard. I know what
Yeah.
this is like.
It's just I've heard so many people talk about things like conversions and things along these lines for at least the last year or so. And then to see a company like Samsung just put this thing out, and up until I was roaming around G Plus and found something about using Linux on the new Samsung devices, I had never thought of or heard of this DeX type docking, phone docking. And it just seems to be like that this dock is the answer that people like Shuttleworth have been looking for quite some time, that if you know that they should have been working together on something like this, as opposed to them trying to do their own thing. And that all those possibilities that everyone thought was kind of a pipe dream are actually real if they just find them, just said that it's there. It's there. This docking station seems like it can do what people need it to do. But like I said, that's where my mind had wandered off to during that long pause.
Well, it's the problem we're running into is the quite frankly, the GPL interfacing the GPL to more industrial licensing systems.
Explain.
Android is Android because it is a proprietary layer over the Linux kernel or some variant of the Linux kernel. GPL can't even interface very well with the BSD licensed CS system. When it comes to industrial licensing, where NDA is the first letter of most contracts, the GPL just especially GPL version 3 just chokes. All Shuttleworks work was done under GPL code, which would make the people who are trying to make something proprietary, like Samsung, Nokia, whatever, break out in hives.
True. I think my thoughts were more on the lines of the core idea was there.
Well, I've seen the core idea done with tablet for a long time through my friends over on, well, I'm distant friends, but the pluggable people have it so that if you have, let's say, a Vectra tablet or whatever, they can break it out and give you a real desktop experience. But again, they're working in a very specialized corner of the world, and the openness of open source makes these industrial, we want to lock it down people really allergic. And that's why the interface you'll find between these docking stations and their host is going to be an Android interface, which they write Linux drivers to. Android is the binary blob that secures their intellectual property to the hardware and software that makes up these devices. The Linux is driving a binary blob just like it would be for a video card or what have you.
Right. But in your opinion, do you think somebody could theoretically take one of these new phones, the new Samsung phones, put it in a dock, well, go to work, put it in a dock, and run, let's say, LibreOffice off their phone, off of LibreOffice in a Ubuntu environment over their phone?
Well, of course. The thing that they're talking about here is the Linux side is beta. You don't even have to run LibreOffice on the phone. There's an online version of LibreOffice, which they're working on, which you could put on any random server and this thing would talk to it beautifully.
Wait a minute, they got that running?
Well, it may be real soon now, but I'm just saying that this is designed as a client for everything from Google Docs to Microsoft, you know, online. Microsoft Word, whatever, Microsoft Office Online. And again, it's the Linux side which is beta. The interface to everybody else and I'm quite sure that there are clients that would happily talk to your LibreOffice on your if you have a server installed version at work.
I think my point was that it would, you can, it opens up the possibility of running more desktop like applications on your Android phone by when you plug it in and running you can run more desktop applications on the phone when you use the dock and installing a Linux operating system on it. And it seems like that would be that the applications, desktop-like applications that you could run on it, would be better than. Well, then again, I've never used like the Office 360, but that's just on the Office side of things. I'm not sure how it would affect other applications. I don't know. What do you think would be an application besides an Office application that someone would use, a desktop-like application?
Chrome.
Yeah, and Chrome would work fine because Chrome would work fine on the Android side of things.
Well, I'm saying when they talk about a desktop web browser, they're carefully not saying they don't want to give Google too much credit. So it's probably chrome, chromium, iron, something like that. And once you get that, you also get all of the proprietary DRM for running your Netflix and Hulu or whatever that plugs into Chrome and or Chrome type stuff.
Right. But if you just plug it in and run it as the Android environment, which you can do with this dock, you don't have to run the dock isn't necessarily geared directly towards Linux. It just Linux is another possibility. When you plug it in, it'll give you a desktop like Windows, no, Windows environment, the desktop like Android environment when you plug it into the dock. So all their regular Android applications, including Netflix, Hulu, should automatically just be usable.
Well, I'm just saying that the it some people use Chrome like the old Emacs people. It's the operating system. That's how come the Chromebooks work. You know, Chrome is the overriding things and all the applications are plugged into it.
Right. Though I don't think if you were in the Linux environment running Chrome that you would be able to run you might be able to run Netflix, because Netflix I think is now usable on Chrome without the whole user agent rigmarole. I think Hulu always was, but
Well, Chrome, basic Chrome, or basic Chrome will run, Firefox will do Netflix these days. That was a big hullabaloo. Although what Firefox 56 and 57 are going to be like, well, Firefox 57, nobody knows what that's like.
Chrome.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see, since there are several projects that are basically legacy Firefox, to see if the Mozilla people will be supporting the older plugins even in a network accessible form, or will we have to develop our own application store for pre-57 code?
I don't know. Even past my time of wondering, I still kind of always fall back to Chrome or Chromium.
Yeah, I'm working with basically Waterfox and Pale Moon as various retro Firefoxes for the moment. The thing about the web APIs or whatever is that they're still evolving or nobody has run a Pardon me, without the native interfaces, so nobody knows how little of the user interface that people have built up by plugging their own extensions into are going to be left when Mozilla pulls the switch on at 56 or 57. If things run great, but half of the carefully developed user interfaces that people are using disappear because they're legacy plugins, the audience is not going to be a happy camper.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like Apple has gone their own way with locking their machines down and limiting expansions outside the factory and whatnot. So what have people done? They've gone to building Hackintoshes and not buying Apple at all. Well, I have a feeling that Mozilla will find a lot of people hacking mutant Firefoxes that continue as far as they can the pre-57 code base.
Now, the basically what they're doing is they're cutting off the ability for some of the plugins, right?
Everything that was not written for their new web API that was written for Firefox, let's say 54 and earlier, is going to be inoperable. They're gutting an entire, they're gutting all of the traditional legacy APIs. And Firefox 56 is a supports both the new and the old APIs, but it is not going to be made LTS or ESR, which is going to make a lot of people upset.
I think what I thought was that even if people keep up like the older code base for the browser itself, they'd also have to have people keeping up the code for the APIs or the plugins that run the APIs at the original maintainers, hopefully, or maybe even the original maintainers got to still maintain them past the point of desertion.
Well, what you're going to end up with is a retro community, much like the OS2 community after IBM gave up on it.
But I'm going to take a wild guess and that the OS2 war community is one very, very small community.
Actually, recently regenerated by ArcOS coming out. But I'm saying you're going to end up with people, there are still people running Windows 95, 98, you know, retro gamers. There's a retro community. And Firefox, because it is open source and because there is source code available to very fast current generation versions of Firefox, especially Firefox 56, there will be people that will fork Firefox 56 just to keep the old interfaces alive. There is a project called Pale Moon, which has already done this for the pre-Australis desktop interface in Firefox. It is still locked at version like 27.4 or something like that. It's, again, the kind of shattering you get that produced the Trinity desktop, Mate, you know, there are people that will actively re-envision things under the older model.
Yep. And now that you're talking about it, I would love to be able to try to look for some of those old PC games and run them in a virtual machine or emulated environment, whatever. There was a lot of them back in the day I used to play that I loved.
Well, I've been following people that are actually building anywhere from 386, 486, P1, P2 machines, actual hardware systems to do it. And there's certainly a lot of stuff online of various places of getting what people call abandonware so that you can run them on your either on your old hardware or running them on emulated hardware. DOSBox, which I understand can be enhanced with the new FreeDOS version if you know how to connect them up properly, which would give you 32-bit file access and stuff, FAT32, is a possibility if you're willing to work in that neighborhood.
Not a bad idea. I have to find the games too.
Well, there are a lot of games out there from, shall we call them, secondary sources, and you just have to connect yourself with the community and find out which secondary sources are trustworthy and which ones are not. Actually, I've run into a computer problem that was tearing my hair out. I've got a TPM-based HP machine, and when I replaced the hard drive, it wouldn't recognize any bootable operating system on the hard drive.
What happened?
If I boot this machine up directly, it won't recognize evidently the trusted platform module will not recognize the my installed application, which is Debian Stretch, and it says no operating system on the hard drive.
Oh, is this when you were saying you had to boot into with a DVD first or something, or a live USB before you can actually get onto the to get it to boot onto the hard drive?
Yes, and I haven't tried running VirtualBox, so I don't know what other options the BIOS has helpfully shut off.
All right, so by the looks of it, I might be able to. Play the games off of a website called Classic Reload. That looks like I can start it up, and it starts up a web-based DOS box.
Well, that would be a very nice first cut, because once you know what games out there you'd like to play, if it's truly a DOS box, eventually you can run DOS box as a local application with its and not have to necessarily run on the web.
Right, and it'll probably run a little bit smoother too because it's seems to run okay, but I'm sure if it was running locally on more current hardware, it would run a little bit smoother.
Well, the internal data transfer rates that you'd get by running DOSBox as an application versus DOSBox at the end of a very thin pipe. I'm considering running, I'm thinking seriously about running DOSBox plus FreeDOS if I can figure out how to get DOSBox to basically load the FreeDOS stuff. It's supposed to be doable, but I haven't worked with it enough. And that might make an entire desktop that I P1 that I have here go back to the attic.
What do you think, sir? I think two guys and a bunch of links have put together a pretty good show. What do you think?
Yeah, I think we've done coming up on a 2-hour show, with both of us flapping our arms as fast as we can. We've done pretty good, and we missed the other two engines of our organization here, but we've done pretty good for limping along.
Yep. What do you think? Should we call it a night?
I think so. This is Netminer signing off.
So our next recording date is November 3rd, 2017. Our music is Downright, provided by Klaatu and Brome. We want to thank Tony Bemis from the Sunday Morning Linux Review for our web hosting, WordPress support, and our email list server. We want to thank Delwyn for providing the Mumble server we use and for creating a bot module. To find the next next show recording date and the IRC channel, just type in .ns. I have been Honky Magoo. With me has been Netminer.
Good night, all.
And we'll talk to everybody again in November. Good night. Reminded me actually to start recording. So have you had a chance to look over any of the links in the show notes?
And what beautiful links they are.
I'm just bringing up 50 security stuff now. I haven't had a chance to look at them yet.
That's what that statement was supposed to say, that I was just looking at the links, never mind their what they point to.
Ah, gotcha.
I've been distracted the last couple of weeks with property issues.
Ooh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, a neighbor wants to put a fence up the middle of my driveway.
That's not a place for a fence.
Well, this guy he says that's where his property line is, which I disagree with, and I'm having to pay a surveyor so that my wishes get at least observed a little bit. Also, this is a guy who believes occupying your front porch is a way of getting entry to what he really wants, which is the backyard. Actually, he's had some trouble with our conservation department, and they have, while inspiring him to fence that particular part of his property, have not, of course, said, do not mess with your neighbor in the process. Both of the surveys that this stuff is based on are World War I era.
So good and recent.
However, I have my property survey seems to be thoroughbred and his is just an old nag, so I have a different class of survey. Because of the thoroughbred nature of my property, changing its boundaries is expensive, but we may end up getting easements where you can use that part and I can use this part and everybody's happy. It is making me remember how neighborly the guy who just put a fence up off the effective boundary of our property was. You know, he just left the boundaries where they'd been for 40 years. On more Linuxy news, I've installed Q4OS, the newest hot release.
Was that the that was the Debian-based distro distro you were playing with, wasn't it?
It's Debian, and it has Trinity as the basis. And they have a XP sort of theme engine that they can overlay it with.
Right, I remember you telling me about that. How is it?
I've just installed it. I haven't done that much with it. Little peculiar in that it didn't allow special symbols in the password.
Really?
I'm hoping that's an installer feature and I can change the password with the Debian password command.
I would imagine. It would seem very odd if they locked that out or changed that at all.
I think it made it easier for the installer verifications, somebody wrote.
Probably.
Also, it's an old P4 and it's going to be driving mostly square screens, so Having something that runs XP-like is pretty good. And I no longer can use Ubuntu on my 32-bitter, so I decided to go with something Debian.
Why can't you use Ubuntu on your 32-bitters? Why can't you use Ubuntu? Sorry.
16.04 is the last 32-bit LTS Ubuntu.
Really?
Yes. 17.10 does not come out in 32-bit.
That's disgusting.
That's why we're going to have to go straight Debian-based stuff. Sparky, Linux Mint Debian Edition, that sort of thing. You know that Canonical is lining itself up for an IPO.
Oh, yeah.
And supporting ancient CPUs is not business friendly.
Yeah, but 32-bit's not that ancient.
If you're selling yourself as a modern tech company, it's not that modern either.
Fair enough. But, I mean, it's not like, 64 and 32-bit is pretty much the standard. I mean, it's not like if you support 32-bit that you're going to be thought less of.
Well, it's all those 32-bit drivers for GPUs and whatnot. They may still come out with a 32-bit server edition.
But not a 32-bit desktop edition?
Right, so you could bolt your own stuff on straight out of Debian. But it saves them a lot of the hair of dealing with desktops and 32-bits.
See, I have two 32-bit machines and two 64-bit machines. The two 64-bit machines is one's a big old laptop, another one's a big old desktop. I have two smaller laptops, which are nice 32-bit machines, and they all run fine. You know, the going away from the 32-bit is just starting to really just bug the crap out of me.
Well, I've just converted this old P4 to SATA storage.
How's that working out?
Well, since it was the IDE's first are unavailable at Micro Center anymore, the SATA conversion seems to be pretty good. I got more storage than I know what to do.
Nice.
Also, I have a couple of 64-bit desktops which I can convert to nice bigger machines if I want to, but again, I haven't. When you go away from Windows, you go away from a lot of storage hunger.
Right.
Fact is, what is needed is a good redundant storage system for within, let's say, the 4 gig space. ZFS is great, but it tends to be a memory hog.
I've never played around with ZFS.
A standard ZFS memory support is like 16 gigs for the ZFS subsystem.
So I'm pretty sure it's just going to be you and I. Do you want me to kick off the intro and get this thing started?
Yes. Well, you be chief, I be Indian. You wear the big bonnet, I'm allergic to feathers.
Alrighty.
SMLR 2.0 is the revamped Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis, Mary Tomich, and Tom Lawrence. On even episodes, we cover distro fever and tech news. On the odd episodes, we'll be fresh looks where we review a distro or software or tips and tricks. Live recordings are bi-weekly. Sunday morning on both Google Hangouts on air and audio-only stream. Visit smlr.us for all the shows and the live recording schedule.
Oh my God, it's Hacker Public
Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
The Linux Link Tech Show, Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Find us on the web at www.twlts.org or email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC server, thelinuxlink.net/techshow. Join Pat, Alan, Link, and Joel. And don't forget the two Dans. They are so hot. I know, because I've kissed them both. And Flying Rich, he's a bloody drunko.
If you don't like a guest, you can get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll get back.